Phil, there are so many great television shows and movies.
That's right. Thank goodness Resonance Rewind has the team to analyze them on a personal basis with Robin Pierce, Jenny Bill, Jessica Burtis, Alex Lefchuk, and some key additional guests from the Temporal Nexus.
Aren't you one of those key additional guests?
No. I'm the Temporal Nexus.
Settling in for a 13-hour transatlantic flight to a land rife with ancient mysteries is Justin Sanderson. Mr. Sanderson's occupation is to uncover unbiased truth. But with an hour left between certain doom, he must ask the right questions of the right people. Landing at the truth this time will require an unscheduled stopover in the Twilight Zone.
Fly me to the moon, let me play among the stars. Let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand. In other words, baby, kiss me. Fill my heart with song and let me sing forevermore. You are all I long for, all I worship and adore. In other words, please be true. In other words, I love you.
Traveling through another dimension, a dimension not only of sight and sound, but of mind. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition, and it lies between the pit of one's fears and the summit of one's knowledge. You are now traveling through a dimension of imagination. You just crossed over into the Twilight Zone. Podcast predicts the future? Well, we'll find out with Resonance Rewind. Robin, let's move straight to your good self, because as you can see, it's very much a battle of the Twilight Zone. Or is it? Is it not just an homage, and isn't it just a case of an updated version in terms of Adam Scott stepping into the seat? And you've got Captain Donna, you've got obviously a passage called Beaumont, an homage to Charles Beaumont, you've got lots of Easter eggs, including the gremlin itself that appears on a kind of tribute to Lost. So is this not Jordan Peele just having fun and enjoying an awesomely wonderful nightmare at 30,000 feet?
Well, first of all, let me just say there goes most of my material. Homages and all. Okay, so it's a nightmare at 30,000 feet. Story by Simon Kinberg, Jordan Peele, and Marco Ramirez. Teleplay by Marco Ramirez, based on Nightmare at 20,000 Feet by Richard Matheson. Or was it? Questionable. PTSD affected journalist Justin Sanderson takes a long haul flight, Northern Gold Star Airline 1015. On this flight, during a stormy night, he finds an MP3 player in the pocket of the seat. Loaded onto this MP3 player is a podcast which accurately foretells the mystery of Northern Gold Star Flight 1015, which disappeared an hour into the flight. And as he's listening to this podcast, all the events seem to be coming true. So, he tries to avert disaster. Will he or won't he? Or is indeed the entire episode a disaster? Let's discuss.
Well, let's go straight away to Jessica, because Jessica, obviously a little bit concerned with flying. Last week, of course, you gave a solid 10 to the original Nightmare at 20,000 feet. What about this one for Nightmare at 30,000 feet, where even more up-to-date times in terms of terrors of the air tends to strike into the fore? What did you make of this?
It definitely made me nervous. I think the Twilight Zone, I was honestly more nervous just about the plane than I was about the mystery. But the mystery is very intriguing. It had my attention the whole time, and I was a bit worried because the classic is unbeatable, in my opinion. And I think this did a good job at kind of keeping that same fear of something supernatural with a plane, but it was a completely different plot, and I liked seeing that. They really made it original and kind of updated it.
37 minutes as opposed to 28 minutes, so about 9 minutes longer. And there's been a bit of a challenge in terms of, obviously, the role of Adam, the actor in performing Adam Scott as Justin Sanderson, of course. And ironically, of course, we're just recording this particular episode of Resonance Rewind 2 days after the feast of St. Justin, the martyr of the first century of the Catholic Church. So there you go. Jenny, what are your thoughts on this particular one? Was it the first year experience of Jordan Peele's Twilight Zone?
I have watched some of the new Twilight Zone episodes, but I had definitely not seen this before. And I really, really enjoyed it. I think partly because it was just all completely new to me, but I really liked the way they kept the music at the end and they kept the Twilight Zone logo and the sort of the format of it. And I thought, you know, I thought, oh, I can't Twilight Zone without Rod Serling. But actually, I think it worked the way they did it. And I liked the way they took the sort of the idea from Nightmare, the 20,000 feet one, and they used it, but they changed it so that you weren't just repeating it. You were making sort of something completely new, but using that sort of idea of somebody that's having a breakdown, and are they really having a breakdown or is this really happening? So yes, I really, really enjoyed it, and I found it very gripping and tensing all the way through. I have to say the ending was a bit and I found it very unpredictable. Actually, I thought it was going to be predictable, but I didn't think it was predictable at all. And then the ending, I thought it had finished, and I thought, oh, that's kind of a gory ending. They just came and whatever they did to him, beat him up. And really, he was a nice guy. He gave up his seat on the plane and bought that guy's magazine. So, yeah, I thought it was a really good twist.
Although you do have the clue insofar as he's authored an article called The End of Civility. And here we have what's been read as a metaphor for the way in which society deals people who have actually had mental issues and mental breakdowns by apparently treating him okay, but then in the end actually turning on him and effectively sort of ending his particular existence. Of course, we don't necessarily know whether, of course, Mr. Beaumont is actually not just a figment of his imagination as well. I suppose the thing is that he's there. And there's always that line which has been raised by a number of critics that Well, why didn't Justin simply spool to the end of the podcast? Find the things out there rather than actually waiting minute for minute as the whole thing proceeds. Lots of, again, I think, wonderful sort of lines. I mean, in terms of Easter eggs, Nicholas Lee, of course, erstwhile X-Files man, puts in a fine performance as one of the cabin staff as well from that point of view. And, of course, Adam Scott is very much an alumni of the awesome Parks and Recreation that we haven't covered as such, but has sort of sprung off so many sort of aspects in the whole field. Robin, I get the sense that you're, you know, in terms of the balance between two well-measured performances, i.e. that of the Shatner and indeed the Scott, you're probably sort of still going to say, no, ultimately, it's 20,000 feet for me all the way.
Well, I came to this, I hadn't seen any of the new Twilight Zone, and I came to this with high expectations. And I thought the episode began actually very, very well. And I was with it. But then there were certain aspects that I found deeply troubling. One, it doesn't appear to be based on Matheson's original short story and teleplay. I would say at
loosely,
best...
Loosely based, perhaps.
Inspired by. going on from there, I've thought that if Rod Serling was alive today, then... Pretty much as back in the day, he embraced things like cars, for example. There's an episode where a car is involved in a hit-and-run accident and the car itself tries to turn the driver into the police. There's a television which shows this couple at war, how one of them kills the other in the very near future. We had cameras predicting the future. We had a stopwatch able to stop time. So it's feasible that Rod Serling himself would, of course, have embraced things like smartphones and MP3 players. So I was with it at that point. But where it all falls apart, for me anyway, and this is a personal view, is... We don't know if anybody else can hear this podcast or whether it's just...
You don't want to share headphones. They could be infectors. Let's just walk away from that.
Well, yeah, but we had the people trying to look out at the gremlin, but they couldn't see him. So we don't know if they could hear or not, because there's the air marshal as well, remember? And it just becomes a white guy on a plane bothering people of colour. And at that point, where he goes up to the Sikhs and the other people who've got long black Muslim-type beards and start harassing them, thinking there's something to do with what he is understanding is going to happen, it just took me straight back to, you know, the viral footage you see of, you know, sort of half-crazed white women reporting black folk having a picnic in the park who are just going about their own business. And I don't know if that was the point trying to be made. In the end, the MP3 is just what Hitchcock used to call a MacGuffin to get into basically a hijacking scenario. And it's as if somebody said, let's do a hijacking story. Well, no, Jordan, this is, you know, this is the Twilight Zone. Oh, we'll have an MP3 that can predict the future just to keep the nerds happy. And to me, it was... To paraphrase the beginning of the narration of the show, it was all shadow, no substance. We didn't have the moralistic twist at the ending. We didn't have that much of a twist ending other than basically everybody ganged up on this guy and tore him apart because they were all found and he wasn't. You know, trying to avert a plane disaster will end up with you being lynched. Is that the moral here? I thought it was a truly bad piece of television. And I spoke about this with Gary Girani last night. And he's very interested to know what everybody else thought of it. But the terms that he used were underwhelming. And I am with him all the way. It might have made a good TV drama. Very, very poor Twilight Zone, I'm afraid.
The best way to spot deceptive behaviour is to act like a deceptive person. Not sure that's the best way yeah, forward.
And when he said that, of course, the air marshal was the least likely one of the slightly terrified and nervous-looking young black girl. What are they saying?
Who are you, the cricket police? I mean, that was an LOL moment for me. Who are you, the cricket police? I thought that was great. And
my favourite line of dialogue, Alex, was right at the beginning where Beaumont says to him, you know, I've never met a magazine writer before. Said nobody ever. I've been doing this for 14 years. Nobody has said that to me, not even when I've told them I'm a magazine writer. Nobody cares.
You haven't travelled on the right airlines, clearly, Robin, because what's not to love about the Spartak Moscow footballer Igor Olaf? I mean, just the name Igor, for me, I think it's great. I mean, this is surely a metaphor for humanity.
It was harassing foreigners, wasn't it? It was just harassing foreigners. If the rest of the series is like this, I mean, I've already taken it off my box set wish list on a certain website.
Jessica, Robin's being somewhat harsh, I believe, and you've had recent experience of obviously travelling internationally on that basis on a transatlantic flight as well. So from Gold Star Flight 1015, and indeed Chapter 1, The Mystery of a Northern Gold Star Flight 1015 from the podcast, was it something which you think, and do you think Robin's being a bit too harsh in terms of that? Do you think it's Jordan Peele, who after all kind of really came to the fore with his excellent movie Get Out? Do you feel that actually maybe, you know, it's gone too far, allowing for the fact that of course the Serling imprint is still there, because Carolyn Serling, I think, who's the daughter of Rod, is still kind of involved with the production team, so there is a kind of Serling line on that basis? Or would we have rather gone back to the 1980s Twilight Zone, which again we haven't looked at as yet, with Bruce Willis, for instance, in the role?
Saturday.
I do understand a lot of what you're saying, because I as well was super frustrated that no one else was trying to listen to the podcast.
They didn't want to affect their ears, Jessica.
Yeah, I was like, why wouldn't the air marshal at least listen to it? But I don't know. I think that in a real life situation, someone having a psychotic breakdown on an airplane would be handled very differently, because I think the air crew have like a plan in place. So I was kind of like iffy on that, but I do think that they tried to stay a bit true in the beginning to Twilight Zone, and I could definitely see how like that was kind of built up with kind of like the fear environment that they had going on, and it felt a bit otherworldly. I would just say at the end, I felt like I kind of was watching more of Black Mirror mixed with The Lottery. And it was something that it felt a bit more like the gruesome aspect, I think, was something I never remember really from The Twilight Zone. Even though there were a few episodes that were really dire, I think that's like what really separated it. The ending was so disturbing to me. I don't know. I just didn't like it. Like the whole stoning thing. Yeah, that messed me up. I think that's the part of it I really didn't appreciate or see through.
Although you could argue that He Who Is Without Sin did actually cast the first stone, because, of course, it's Adam, of course, the name of the first man who picks up the stone in the first place. We do see, of course, that notion of a nod, perhaps unconsciously, but the words "be seeing you" actually sort of emerges, very much the catchphrase from The Prisoner that's actually there. Plus, of course, we also have a classic sort of initial line. I think the opening line's, "Sir, I'm going to have to ask for permission for an additional pat-down." Jenny, are you kind of now beginning to sort of think, oh, maybe it's not great? Or are you still sort of thinking, look, it's got Adam Scott in the whole process. It's got to be wonderful.
I'm not overly overwhelmed by Adam Scott. I understand what Robin's saying, I mean, about it not being like The Twilight Zone. I have to say that by the time it finished, I had actually forgotten that it was The Twilight Zone, but I did actually enjoy watching it just as a bit of TV drama. And I did think that it had flaws, like, for instance, not anybody listening to the what he was listening to, or even like at the end
he did ask, but nobody wanted to infect their ears,
like at the end of the episode.
But everybody has those ear sets you know, in the back seat.
Yeah,
no, he didn't have his. He had to lean over to his neighbor to actually get the headphones.
Yeah, there were over 100 of the passengers, and they were all issued with them as part of their standard kit. It's a plot hole, Alex, however much you might want to cement it.
But also the other thing was that, like, at the end of last week's episode, there is that where you see the damage on the wing. So you kind of think, ah, whereas here there was no sort of, I did think at the end it sort of, it kind of was making its own idea about what was happening. But it's like I've said about some of the other things where I think they're quite good TV, but I haven't enjoyed them. This maybe wasn't the greatest TV and certainly isn't a patch on the original Twilight Zone in the black and white and with a lot of the stars that before they were famous. But as a one-off piece of TV, I found I was gripped by it and I really enjoyed it.
Well, of course, we talked about some of the acting, but star first, Joe Beaumont, it's Chris Diamantopoulos. We also have Katie Findlay as the much put upon steward Tammy Crosby. And of course, I think flight attendant Nick, played in a slightly uncamp way by J. Cameron Barnett, also sort of appears, plus lots of other sort of folk from there. Jessica, in terms of the characters, did any kind of stand out, or was it just a case of, I mean, you mentioned the Black Mirror connection. I think that is very true. And certainly the first season of Jordan Peele's Twilight Zone, there are an awful lot that kind of relay that classic notion of fear of technology, uncertainty, where are we going, how we kind of work on that system. But what about, as say, the personification of the characters we see there? Was it a case of, that reminds me of my last trip across the Atlantic?
Thankfully it did not, but planes just freaked me out so bad. But I think I was very sympathetic for Justin. I just felt bad for him. You know, he was not having a good time. And I think the plot twist about who the real villain was, or kind of there being a villain at all, was, I thought, pretty well done, because I knew that I don't even remember that dude's name, the evil guy. I remember that he was involved somehow, like thinking that he was necessary to the plot, but I never expected him to kind of be the thing that the podcast was kind of, I don't know if it was trying to warn Justin, but he was the one that enacted everything in the end, and Justin just happened to accidentally help him. So I think that guy was interesting, but Justin, I feel bad for him.
If only he hadn't released the code to allow access to the cockpit. That was the clear sort of instance. 1015 should never have actually sort of been released, and that led to all sorts of things, including obviously Joe Beaumont's classic line, "Good night, New York." He said the words. It's why we actually launched with Frank Sinatra singing "Come Fly With Me." That was something which, again, you might say was over-egging the pudding. Robin, did you feel as though that was over-egging the pudding, putting in a bit of Frank Sinatra, or just as we're wrapping up this particular sequence with a bit of Manhattan Transfer in the Twilight Zone? Was it just a case of, well, that's what you call polish in the 21st century?
It was just about the only thing in this episode that was polished, because it was just so heavily contrived. You know, he randomly went to sit in a seat that wasn't assigned to him. So had
because he was kind, because he'd actually given up his seat.
Yeah, made the gesture of giving
family
up his seat.
Exactly.
He would never have found the MP3 player. I mean, it's too random. Because normally a Twilight Zone story, somebody has a comeuppance coming to them and they deserve what's coming to them. Be it good, bad, whimsical, comedic, they've got what's coming to them. I mean, this guy was just, you know, he was having a mental breakdown, and he
because suffered, he needs the money. As a freelance writer, he needed the money.
I don't follow your logic. He was trying to do the right thing in trying to warn the pilot, and then he was lynched anyway. I'm sorry, but no. I imagine that Rod Serling at this point must be spinning in his grave like a Catherine wheel.
From classic lines, surely Tel Aviv is not Yemen. Well, actually, you might find if you're living in Tel Aviv today, it's pretty close to Yemen, but never mind. That's by the by. Let's just sort of step away from that. It's another predicting zone from this 2019 scenario. So what about your favourite characters, Jenny? Did you have any, or did they all kind of blur into one?
No, I don't really have any favourite characters.
Not even Jordan Peele?
No, I didn't really. I felt sympathetic for the lead character, but I didn't really have any favourite characters. And I actually thought that the air hostess was quite brusque. I thought, you know, when you go on the plane, they're always like, they're falling over backwards to be charming towards you. And she was quite frosty from the offset. No, there was nobody really that particularly stood out to me. I thought that the lead was very well acted and the rest of it was just kind of supporting.
So questionable from that sort of aspect. Okay. Robin, what about yourself? I mean, you said that you weren't particularly impressed with the overall scenario, but were there sort of moments where you thought, actually, yes, this, you know, Jordan Peele made a very capable stand-in for Rod Serling?
You take that back. You take that back right now. Rod Serling, to me, always seemed earnest because he had written most of the stories and he had a peculiar type of delivery, his emphasis and stuff like that. And you always believed him. Jordan Peele came across to me like he was trying to do some sort of impersonation or parody, and I didn't buy it. But as far as my favourite character in this particular episode, I did like the Air Marshal because she was the least one that I would have thought to be the Air Marshal, not because she was black, but because of the way she was always filmed in a semi-cowering kind of way. Which helped her blend into the background. And the fact that when Justin was sitting with her, she just said very reassuringly, when we land, there will be people who can help you. As if she was trying to bring him back down. Now, her I liked, but the rest, not really.
You wouldn't want to get on the plane with them.
My favourite character was actually the little puppet of the monster from last week that washed up. That was my favourite character.
so not China Shavers, as indeed the Air Marshal. That's okay. You know, we're working through in a whole range of things. Well, the puppet was actually plugged up from that point of view. Interesting in terms of the way that the sort of system is actually going, but we have reached the stage where I think we will attempt to actually sort of score this particular one. We've looked at the elements. Haven't we talked about the music? I mean, does anybody have anything to say about the music? Was it a case of, well, it was again nondescript apart from Frank Sinatra and indeed putting in some other stuff? Did it not kind of have that Marius Constant, Bernard Herrmann edge to the whole system? Of course, we still see the classic Twilight Zone theme.
They used a lot of Jerry Goldsmith there, but they never credited him, and that was the basic laying track to the whole theme. Well, it was written by Bernard Herrmann originally, but enhanced by Jerry Goldsmith for the second season. But there was no acknowledgement of that at all.
One of the criticisms
that got
of course,
me fed up as well.
One of the criticisms has been that effectively it was too long at 37 minutes. Jessica, do you think it was too long, or do you think actually the 28-minute length was just right, or would you have liked to have seen it expanded even further?
I think I have a lot of unanswered questions, and not in the way of the usual Twilight Zone where it's like, oh, it's so mysterious. It's kind of questions where I'm just like, what? Like, I feel like I should have been told something. I think the length was okay. I think I just kept wanting him to play the rest of the audio all at once. I was just getting frustrated that he kept stopping. I just wanted to hear it all.
Okay, Jenny, would you like to actually allocate your mark for the season 1, episode 2 edition of the new Jordan Peele Twilight Zone, Nightmare at 30,000 Feet?
I will give it a 7.
Yep. I would go with, I might actually even go, on repeated viewings, I might go 7.5 to 8. Jessica, what about yourself?
Maybe a 6.5, just for the ending. It kind of brought it down for me. I'm glad you guys mentioned that the doll is the actual monster from the original. I hadn't even realized that until the picture that Alex showed in on his background. I thought it was just an ugly doll, and I was like, who would have that? But I was completely clueless.
Who would actually have that as a sort of part of the whole thing? Maybe it's actually there because ultimately it finally achieved, you know, 40 years later, it finally achieved what it set out to do. 50 years later, it finally brought down the plane saying, thank God, William Shatner isn't on board. I can have some fun now. And Robin, your score?
Well, I liked the homages. I liked Beaumont as a name. I liked Donna as a name. And I particularly liked the image of the gremlin. I picked up on all of those. But I seriously can't give this any more than 3.
Ooh. Jordan Peele would not be happy with that, Robin. He would not be happy. Mind you, he could
Well, make better programs then. Don't complain to me, pal. I'm just a critic. Make a better show.
Robin, in this particular instance, a little bit out of kilter with the system, but then so was Gary Girani, so we just have to wait and see on that one. Next week, Jessica, we are actually still dealing with technology. We're dealing with technology that makes somebody better than they are, stronger, better, fitter, faster, and indeed going even higher than 20,000 feet and higher than 30,000 feet and into orbit with, indeed, Farrah Fawcett. It's Lee Majors in the episode of The $6 Million Man entitled Rescue of Athena 1. So a first season episode of the series that was based on Martin Caden's Cyborg coming to the fore then. Jessica, have you ever encountered the $6 million man before? Which, allowing for inflation, I believe Mark Wahlberg is talking about being the $6 billion man in future books.
I've watched part of an episode. My dad loved it as a kid, so he showed it to me. But I've not seen much.
Well, there we are. Something we can look forward to, as I say, in the next edition of Resonance Rewind. So as we take our leave of predicting the future in this particular podcast, because we tend to predict the future through looking longingly at the past, which is pretty much what Resonance Rewind is about. We wish you well. Keep on resonating, certainly to Jessica Burtis, Jenny Bill and Robin Pierce. I'll say it again. Keep on resonating.
Ah! your approval. When Mr. Miller, who's about to take a trip into oddness and obsolescence through a zone whose boundaries are that of imagination, accompanying him on this journey is the mesmerizing sound of the Twilight Tone.
On a cold and rainy night when Mr. Miller